Today is September 2nd, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet.
Before we get underway, I realize we haven't been terribly clear about what we're, up to at this end of the podcast. Since Jeff jumped onto the show, we've been looking at making some tweaks to the format we got here. So the first thing that everyone should know is that we're not done having other people join us in the context machine. We've got some geekery to work through at my end with the audio. But in the next little while, we should have some interesting different kinds of people, different kind of context machine segments with various mysterious and extraordinary characters. So there's more to come. Stay tuned. It'll be sweet.
Yes, yes, it will. And to get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, of course, you can visit themacobserver.com/roundup.
For this week's Context Machine Fodder, I'm wondering if there's a third model for music distribution that we all overlooked. Or maybe Spiral Frog is just headed for a quick, quiet death.
And we'll also talk about the Foxconn sweatshop story that simply will not die.
Universal Music plans to offer music through a new online service that generates revenue through advertising instead of per-song sales. The Financial Times reports that the service is called Spiral Frog, and it will launch in December. Unlike the iTunes Music Store, which charges 99 cents per download, other services also charge monthly subscription fees. Unlike those, Spiral Frog plans to recoup its costs through advertisement sales. Fashion company Perry Ellis is planning on advertising at Spiral Frog, and Levi's, Aeropostale, I have no idea how to say that, and Benetton have all expressed interest. Additional information on how the service will operate, on which devices it will be compatible with, none of that's available, though we do know that it will encode its files in Microsoft's WMA format.
And Intel, which in April said it would begin figuring out how to cut costs and increase efficiency, could lay off as many as 10,000 or even 20,000 employees early next week. The company currently employs 100,000 people. Apparently, Intel CEO Paul Otellini sent out a company-wide email on Thursday in which he said that he would address workers in a Tuesday webcast. Intel has previously said that it is in the midst of a study to reduce costs, the results of which would be disclosed by the end of this month.
Now, usually at the Roundup, we don't report on stories that are about to happen. Our job, of course, is to talk about what happened during the previous week and put it in context. We're pointing out this story just because laying off 10 or 20% of a workforce is a very big deal, and I want to tag two media outlets before this goes down, CNET and the Wall Street Journal. CNET reported the 10% figure. The Journal reported the 20% figure. And I guess next week we'll see how good their sources were.
Yes, we will. And depending on what happens with those layoffs, maybe we'll look into it in next week's Context Machine.
Now, if you listened to the show last week, you know I really, really want to put this story to bed, but apparently it just won't go away. We'll do this as quickly as possible. On Monday, we reported that iPod manufacturer Foxconn sued a reporter and an editor at a Chinese newspaper, China Business News, after the publication ran an article about substandard working conditions in Foxconn factories. The issue of working conditions first came to light in June, prompting Apple to launch an investigation that concluded earlier this month with the determination that there were some minor violations of its employer code of conduct. The lawsuit led a Chinese court to freeze the reporter and editor's personal assets. The company is seeking 30 million yuan, or a little under $4 million, in damages. So then the theatrics began. After the news of the suit broke, the organization Reporters Without Borders sent a letter to Apple CEO Steve Jobs asking for help. The next day, representatives from Apple confirmed that the company is working to help resolve the legal conflict Foxconn and the two Chinese journalists had. Now, the day after that, we're on Thursday now, by the way, Foxconn agreed to reduce its claim against the journalists from 30 million yuan to one, or about 13 cents. The company will also ask the Chinese courts to unfreeze the journalists' assets. On the other hand, Foxconn will also add the news service that the reporters work for, China Business News, to the list of defendants. It is unclear, of course, if Apple had a direct hand in Foxconn's decision to reduce its claim. And now here's the punchline, and the reason that this story has once again wormed its way into the roundup. Hung Fujin Precision Industry Company, the division of Foxconn that operates with the Longhua factory that manufactures iPods for Apple, has been ordered by the Chinese government to allow its employees to form a trade union. The union will be affiliated with the government's All-China Federation of Trade Unions. In recent years, China has been pressuring companies with foreign investors to allow government-sponsored unions for employees. Let's do the context machine. All right, so let's begin. We're going to get to this Foxconn thing in a second and deal with the remaining pieces of this that we have to discuss. But Jeff, I want to start with Universal's ad-supported music download service. This is interesting to me. A lot of people online blew this off. They said, oh, no one's going to make money doing advertising-supported stuff. But first of all, the first question that I see is, what's the motivation for this? Why would Universal be motivated to open its own music download service, and why would it choose advertising over the other models, subscription or per-song downloads?
Well, I think you can sum it up in one word: money. And they think that this is potentially a new avenue that they can exploit that no one else has. If they're the first, and if they pull it off correctly, then sure, this could be a serious money generator for Universal. Well, of course, we'll have to wait and see, because no one knows exactly how the whole system is going to work.
Now, there's the money reason, clearly, at the end of the day. What any company wants to do is earn some money off of the stuff that they do. I'm also curious if there are other motivations, strategic motivations. I mean, in the article we ran, we talked about file sharing and the pressure that the labels feel to deal with file sharing as a thing. But I feel like there are at least two other things that are worth considering as strategic issues. The first one is the decline of CD sales, the worldwide decline of CD sales. And we've carried articles about that in the past, and a lot of people have. And the third thing that I wanted to get your opinion on, an iTunes alternative. The idea that the music labels don't want to be locked into selling all their songs through iTunes, and so they're trying to find ways to come up with another viable system, in the same way that the movie industry has so many different ways of distributing movies, cable television or Netflix or, you know, Blockbuster, or, you know, you can rent, you can watch it on TV, you can watch it, you can buy it on DVD, all those things. Maybe the labels are just trying to come up with something that does not rely on iTunes for digital distribution.
I think you're right. The labels, actually, I think another word we need to throw out into the mix besides money is desperation. And seriously, I think the labels are desperate to try and find models that can boost the revenues back up that they're losing because CD sales are declining. Now, Universal, having what seems to be the largest single music library, is in the position where they have a lot more to offer to the average consumer than some of the other music labels, just in sheer volume. And by volume, I mean quantity, not sound.
And that is a big issue. I mean, when people talked about the release of iTunes and the other legal downloading services, one of the major criticisms, even when Apple said we're launching iTunes with half a whatever it was, million songs, I think, 500,000 songs in their library,
right.
People said, you know, I can't find the song that I want. I can find plenty of stuff, but I can't find the song that I'm looking for. The idea that the Universal store would only have songs from Universal might give people some pause.
Yes. And, well, now, Universal, since they do have the weight of their massive library to throw around, and that also means they also have a lot of money behind it, they're in a position where they can experiment a little bit more than some of the other labels can. So trying the whole ad-sponsored download service is something that they feel a little more comfortable experimenting with than some of the other labels would. So I'm sure that there's a lot of other music labels that are watching closely just to see how this plays out, because if it works out well, okay, now maybe they'll try it out too. Another thing that goes along with this is that you have all of these different companies that have up until now been relying on Microsoft for joint download services. So you'd have all of these other iTunes competitors that are out there. Now that Microsoft is jumping into the mix with its Zune products and its Zune download service, now we have an issue or a situation where we have a lot of companies that are suddenly looking for alternatives because they really feel like Microsoft slapped them in the face and is now a competitor instead of a partner. This may be another one of those attempts to circumvent Microsoft and provide alternative download services outside of the whole technology bundle that Microsoft has been offering people.
Now, you mentioned something about taking a risk, essentially experimenting with what they're doing. That begs the question, what's the worst thing that could happen here? I mean, if it fails, if no one adopts it, what's the worst thing that happens to Universal? Is there any possibility of them polluting their reputation or losing a lot of money on this?
Universal could lose money on this, sure, but in the grand scheme of things, they wouldn't lose a lot of money. The people that would really lose out in this would be the artists, and that's actually one thing that, from what I've seen so far, hasn't been figured out. How are the artists going to get their royalties out of this model? Because no one really knows how much money is going to come out of it anyhow, so how do you account for that for the artists?
And a lot of the answer to that presumably depends on the advertising structure itself. We don't know if we're using this service, when we see the ads, when we hear the ads. We don't know if it's going to be when you listen to the music, when you download, when you're browsing for music. We have no idea, right?
Right. I certainly hope it's not embedded in with the songs. I would rather have a stick in the eye than download free music that has commercials in it.
Well, anyway, so we talked recently, a number of times actually in the past on this show, about the possibility of a sea change in terms of the way people buy their music and the expectations that they have. Brian Chaffin, I've said this before on the show, Brian Chaffin has been on and says, I want to own my music. And Dave Hamilton has come on and he said, I want to own my music, but a lot of younger people might not care. They might say, you know, what if I can pay $15 a month and have access to all the music in the world? Then maybe that's worth it. And they don't feel so strongly about owning things. Maybe there's a generation gap there. And it's interesting to me, the reason that I'm not so inclined as many of the people that comment on this stuff online to blow this off and to say this is silly, we shouldn't, you know, it's going to completely implode. It seems like an interesting idea. I mean, a lot of stuff in the world is ad-supported. Did we overlook this? Is it possible that this is a viable way of dealing with music, of selling music?
It's possible. I mean, it's worked for other, what I would call subscription-based services before, which would be like broadcast television. That whole model is built on paid advertising.
And radio.
Yeah, and radio too. So we already have a precedent to say this does work. Now, will this work for this market? I don't know. It may. One thing that I look at with all of this is that so far I've seen one company that's been really successful online at giving everything away for free and still making money, and that's Google. So we even have a precedent there. Yeah, you can give something away and make money online. Great. But I'm not convinced yet that Universal is going to be able to pull this off and make it work in a fashion that's palatable to the consumer. I might be completely wrong. We'll have to wait and see.
Fair enough. Now, we're going to wait on the Intel story until next week, whether we don't know whether or not there's actually going to be a story there. If there is, we'll talk about it. But let me ask you this. Why the hell is Foxconn suing journalists for 13 cents in damages?
Oh, this whole Foxconn thing. I so wish it would just go away. Oh, man. They're doing the 13-cent thing now because they're trying to save face. And in my opinion, this is a really bad way to do it. But they wanted to bring their lawsuit against these reporters and under pressure, potentially from Apple, because they were asked by Reporters Without Borders to jump in and help out, and apparently they have in some way. So, but I digress. So they decided to go ahead and instead of saying we want $30 million from these reporters or the reporter and the editor, we're going to go ahead and drop it to one. And by dropping it to one, they can still maintain their lawsuit because they actually have to have some damage that they're claiming. And they can still proceed forward and attempt to save face. What they're saying is, you know, we need to defend our reputation. My feeling is, if you want to defend your reputation, why don't you do it through action instead of slapping around journalists that uncover your problems in court?
All right. Now, I don't want to hammer away at this story any more than you do. I do want to ask you this, though. I'm curious, when I look at this, I feel like we're watching a kind of economic, political, global situation that could only have developed with a company in China. And I'm curious, when you look over this series of events, do you think this story could have developed in some other part of the world? I mean, this combination of a company that has substandard working conditions and the lawsuit at the same time and the development of the trade union and the relationship with the big marquee customer on the other side of the ocean, that would be Apple Computer in this case. I mean, all of this is a very bizarre situation. Could this have happened anywhere else in the world?
I hope not. No, really, I hope not. But I'm thinking that with the exact circumstances we have here, only in China. But, you know, it's possible with the way politics and business work in other countries that have governments that aren't like what you're going to find in the United States or Great Britain or Canada or, you know, countries like that. Things work a lot differently, and we're experiencing that right now. And when you're working across borders like this, and especially across cultures, things go differently. And this is just one example of how they can really go differently. And apparently this whole thing with Foxconn suing journalists that say bad things about them, this isn't the first time this has happened.
I'm also curious, this is another thing, here in the U.S., there's a lot of discussion about whether our economic, and this is, by the way, this is a very touchy political subject, and I want to bring it to people's attention as a subject, and then I also want to get your opinion on this, Jeff. There's a lot of discussion in the U.S. about whether our economic involvement in China, the fact that China has most favored nation trading status with the United States, can have any effect on worker conditions and human rights in China. The reason that it has such bipartisan support is that the argument goes, in addition to all the economic benefits of open trade with China, we also will create the opportunity for us to build a relationship across the Pacific and change the culture there, in essence, make it improve the human rights situation, improve the worker condition situation, and so forth, improve the democracy situation. Now, the postscript to this whole story about Foxconn and Apple and the sweatshop stuff is that Foxconn is being required by the Chinese government to allow its workers to unionize, which is fascinating to me. Is there any reason that an observer of this situation should not step back and say, yeah, the U.S. involvement here, the fact that Apple got involved and was interested in making sure that the working conditions were good in the factory and so forth, essentially affected the trajectory of working conditions in China, that this is a case study in how the U.S. can help. Is there any reason that we shouldn't walk away saying that to ourselves?
Yes, there's all kinds of reasons why we shouldn't walk away saying that. Although I think we're safe saying that the course of actions here has affected how worker conditions will be viewed in this particular factory for this particular company in China. Keep in mind, we're dealing with very different cultures here, and those cultures have more differences than just social. There's also business and work differences as well. So that's a big cultural issue, because Apple is working based on the cultural standards and business practice standards that it's created from a United States style business model. That's not how China works. And to think that the Chinese government has gone in acting solely in the benefit of the common man is, I think, wrong. Most governments,
or at least naive.
Or at least naive, yes. And when the government goes in a situation like this and says it's time to unionize, it's not really to help the average guy, although ultimately the average man may see some benefits from this. Keep in mind, China is opposed to unions. However, if you're part of a government-sanctioned union, which is a union that's actually run through the government, then that's okay. And from what I understand, and if I'm wrong, I'm sure we'll get emails to correct me, you can't just start a government-style union. You have to have the government's permission first. And the government doesn't so much say, oh, yes, you'd like to form a union? Great, go ahead and form a union. They go in and say, guess what? It's time for your union. Now, to the outside world, what we see is, hooray, China's standing up for the workers' rights, and they're creating a union to protect these people. I don't think that's the case. I think this is more of a thing where the Chinese government will have better control, or at least more control, over what's going on in that part of the business market. And this was their opportunity to go in and set all of this up without looking like a bad guy. And also keep in mind that these unions typically are not structured to aid the average person. They're structured to aid the management.
It's also very interesting to me. We have this one line mentioned in the article that we ran. In recent years, China has been pressuring companies with foreign investors to allow government-sponsored unions for employees. So it is clearly something that has to do with the relationship between Chinese and presumably, in particular, American business, but Chinese and business outside of China, that is international
sure.
trade. All right, well, I think that's going to have to be that's kind of a depressing note to end on, but it's
yes, it is.
That's the note to end on. If you have questions or thoughts about the news, particularly about any of this international trade stuff, I'd love to hear what you people think about this, and I'm sure that there are people out there who are more expert in either Chinese business or Chinese culture than we are.
I would certainly
please.
Hope so.
Yeah, and the email is roundup@macobserver.com if you want to send that stuff to us.
Okay, now before we go on, one of the reasons Ricky and I are now doing the Roundup together is that we want to be able to turn the product Roundup into a more useful segment. So far, we've just run down product announcements from the previous week, and that can be useful, but we'd really like to help you all learn about products in a way that might change how you work each week.
And of course, the good news here is that Jeff is TMO's reviews editor, for those of you that might not know that. So he and I have been working together to put some product reviews onto the show. Now, we've got some planned already, and they'll be coming along in the next few weeks.
But we're mentioning this now because we want to hear if there are types of products you'd like to know more about. For example, we're going to do a segment on products that let you listen wirelessly to your Mac's music. Most of us have heard of Apple's AirPort Express, but there are some other cool products out there. So the point is that you should let us know if there's something you've wanted to do with your computer, manage multimedia, organize files, schedule meetings, whatever. And if you write in, we'll track down the products out there that do those things, come back, and talk about them on the show. And you can send your ideas to roundup@macobserver.com.
And I'm actually really psyched about this. I think it's going to be pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think it is. And you know what? I'm really glad you're happy.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah, so let's do the product roundup.
Keyspan announced its new VP 24A cordless voice over IP phone on Monday. It's Skype compatible and connects wirelessly to your Mac through the included USB receiver. The phone will be available in September and is priced at $80.
In gaming news, Aspyr Media announced on Tuesday that it will publish the Civilization IV expansion pack, Warlords, this November. Additions to the game include 8 new historical scenarios that span Alexander the Great's conquests all the way through Genghis Khan's romp through Asia. Aspyr has set neither pricing nor system requirements, except for the fact that Warlords will require Civilization IV to play.
Aspyr also announced on Monday that The Sims 2, open for business for the Mac, is now shipping. It's priced at $35.
And OpenOffice, the free open-source alternative to Microsoft Office, is expected to be available in a native Mac OS X version next month, in time for the Apple Expo in Paris. Because it's open-source, it's also free.
Stinkbot has released TubeSock, a utility that converts YouTube videos into iPod, Mac, or PlayStation portable-ready versions. TubeSock can also import the videos into iTunes. Pricing is $15 US.
And also this week, Chris Berylik takes a look at Excalibur, Morgana's Revenge, which is actually a very cool hack of the old Bungie game, Marathon. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Weekly Roundup.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Thank you, Jeff, and everybody else. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The base is by Boom for TMO. Also, the Podcast Expo is coming up. Don't forget, September 29th and 30th. Let me know if you're going to be there. Send me an email. You can send it, of course, as always, to roundup@macobserver.com. And I'd love to know if any of you guys are going to be out there. Ontario, California is where it's going to be held.
Excellent. And remember, send us ideas for the product roundup. What types of tasks would you like to learn about? Send your stuff to roundup@macobserver.com.
And that's all I've got.
And please stay subscribed.
Until next week, we will see you online.